this is, they've already been, the brothers have been down to Egypt once. Joseph has not told them who he is. They've gone back. Now they're back the second time. That's where we pick up with the story. Joseph, in verse 1, could not control himself before all those who stood by him. He cried, "Make everyone go out from me." So no one stayed with him when Joseph made himself known to his brothers. He wept aloud, so the Egyptians heard it, and the household of Pharaoh heard it. And Joseph said to his brothers, "I am Joseph. Is my father still alive?" But his brothers could not answer him, for they were dismayed at his presence. So Joseph said to his brothers, "Come near to me, please." And they came near. He said, "I am your brother Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt. And now do not be distressed or angry with yourselves because you sold me here, for God sent me before you to preserve life. For the famine has been in the land these 2 years, and there are yet 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvest. And God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant on earth, and to keep alive for you many survivors. So it was not you who sent me here, but God. He has made me a father of Pharaoh and lord of all his house and ruler over all the land of Egypt. Hurry and go to my father and say to him, 'Thus says your son Joseph, God has made me lord of all Egypt. Come down to me, do not tarry. You shall dwell in the land of Goshen. You shall be near me, you and your children and your children's children and your flocks, your herds and all that you have. There I will provide for you. For there are yet 5 years of famine to come, so that you and your household and all that you have do not come to poverty. Now your eyes see. The eyes of my brother Benjamin see that it is my mouth that speaks to you. You must tell my father of all my honor in Egypt and of all that you have seen. Hurry and bring my father down here." Then he fell upon his brother Benjamin's neck and wept. Benjamin wept on his neck. And he kissed all his brothers and wept upon them. And after that, his brothers talked with him. This is the word of the Lord. An amazing story, isn't it? I think this story that we find in Genesis is like so many that we read. It's easy for us to read these things historically and not really enter into the emotion of the actual event. But I hope you heard it as we read that story. These words are dripping with emotion. These words are full of emotions of wrongs in days gone by, of not understanding the hand of God's providence, of forgiveness that was being offered and extended, rich and full of drama and forgiveness and grace and emotion. I thought I might subtitle this sermon, "The Gospel According to Joseph." For there are gospel glimmers in everything that we do. Now, let me say at the outset, long before HBO had Tony Soprano, Genesis had Joseph. Guy that I got to confess does not always give me the warm fuzzies. I often run ideas past my wife. When I first preached on Joseph, I wanted to say that Joseph was a bit of a, and you can fill in the blank, and my wife said, "You can't say that." Okay. Joseph was a bit of an interesting character. And he was, wasn't he? I mean, this was a guy that would have driven me nuts if I was one of the brothers. I mean, he was Dad's favorite. I mean, he had the coat of many colors. Dad didn't make one for any of the other brothers. I mean, Joseph was Dad's favorite. And on top of that, he was the youngest. And he had all the dreams. And here's, how many of you had younger siblings? Yeah. How many of you were the younger sibling? Okay. You can play this both sides in your mind. I had a younger brother. I know how it would have worked out had my brother come to me and said, "Wally, I've had a dream. You're going to bow down and call me Lord, and you're going to be my servant." That would not have gone well at all. It would, that dog, in Oklahoma we would say that dog would not hunt. And you can suffice to say it would not have. I won't tell you how that story would have wound up in my household, but I mean, here is Joseph. A little irritating. In one of the chapters you read, he went out to look at the brothers as they were keeping the sheep, and he didn't like the way they were doing it, so he goes and rats them out to Dad. "They're not doing a very good job down there." "Thanks, buddy. Appreciate you sharing that with Dad." I mean, this whole thing is just full of layers and dimensions. So the brothers come up with a plot, right? You know the story. "We're going to kill Joseph." Now, that's a little over the top. There were times that I said that to my brother, but I never meant it. I mean, we knew that. He and I knew that. These brothers meant it. And Reuben goes, "Well, not so fast. That's a little over the top. Let's just sell him as a slave." I mean, that's a lot better, right? And so they come up with this plot, and into the pit goes Joseph, and along comes a band of Ishmaelites. Do you remember that name, Ishmael? Abraham. Abraham's son by his handmaid was named Ishmael. Hagar and Ishmael were cast out, but God had a promise to Ishmael and Hagar. "I'm not going to forget Ishmael. I'm going to make of him a great nation, just as I'm going to make of Isaac a great nation." So that promise, way over here, it is a band of Ishmaelites that come along and they sell Joseph to a band of Ishmaelites. Where do they take Joseph? To Egypt. It's not getting any better. And they sell Joseph to a dude by the name of Potiphar, who's a pretty substantial guy, right? And he finds his place in Potiphar's house. One of the themes woven throughout this story and woven throughout the fabric of our own journeys is that thing that I remind you of quite often at the conclusion of our services. You go nowhere by accident. You go nowhere by accident. Oh, how true that was for Joseph and the hand of God sovereignly directing, and yet the brothers fully humanly responsible. The Joseph character becomes increasingly complex. He works his way up in Potiphar's house because Joseph is a stand-up guy. By this point in his life, he's learned some lessons, right? He's not nearly as irritating as he was before. And then there's Potiphar's wife. And we know that part of the drama, but here is Joseph, though he's been in Egypt now for quite some time, a man of integrity, a man who did not forget his Hebrew upbringing, a man who did not forget his God, and he is confronted with Potiphar's wife with the opportunity to commit adultery. And Joseph runs and he says, "How can I do this great evil and sin against my God?" And he would not. And he's unjustly accused of sexual assault, and we know that that's going to land him in jail. You go nowhere by accident. And in jail he meets the cupbearer. He meets a baker who have gotten on the outs with Pharaoh, and themselves are in jail, and they have dreams. We'll cut to the chase, and Joseph interprets those dreams, and it goes well for the cupbearer. He's going to get his job back, and it's not going to go so well for the baker. He's going to lose his life. But to the cupbearer, Joseph says, "Just remember me when you're restored to the kingdom." And 2 years pass. 2 years pass, and the cupbearer, Pharaoh, now has a dream. And nobody can interpret Pharaoh's dream. The cupbearer says, "Wait a second. I remember a guy who interpreted my dream for me when I was in jail." You go nowhere by accident. And Joseph interprets the dream of Pharaoh, and he tells Pharaoh, "You're going to have 7 years of plenty, but you're going to have 7 years of famine." And there is this plan then that Pharaoh has, and Joseph communicates it to him. "You better save up while life is good, because you're going to have 7 years of famine." And so Joseph is made number two in the kingdom, Pharaoh's right hand. While Pharaoh's not there, Joseph is in charge. Really, rather than number two, it's 1A and 1B. We can fast forward the 7 years of plenty. They're gone. Now it's the 7 years of famine. And Jacob, his dad, and the brothers start to get real hungry. Jacob says, "I hear they've got food down in Egypt. I want you boys to go down there and buy us some." And you go nowhere by accident. The brothers make their way, and immediately Joseph recognizes the brothers. They don't recognize Joseph. After all, he's assimilated into Egyptian culture. He looks Egyptian. He speaks Egyptian. His wife is Egyptian. His kids, they've been born in Egypt, and he is thoroughly Egyptian. Yet he has not left the faith that he learned as a young Hebrew boy. He recognizes the brothers. The brothers do not recognize him. Would love to tell you that there's instant forgiveness and reconciliation and life is good, but now it's a story of manipulation and intrigue, and there's money put in the sacks, and the brothers go back, and Simeon is kept back here as hostage, if you would, that they bring Benjamin back with them. Finally, they get hungry enough, they have to make a second trip, and Benjamin comes back, and that's where we pick up the story in Genesis chapter 45. This is the climax of the Joseph cycle. It's time for Joseph to tell them who he is. Remember the words that we read. He sends everybody out of the room. And what does he begin to do? He begins to weep so loudly. So loudly that they heard it, and Pharaoh and everybody else heard it. I mean, this is intense stuff. Here's the first question. I'm Joseph. Is Dad still alive? He didn't know. He didn't have cell phones he could pick up. He didn't have email he could send. Is Dad still alive? Oh, still alive and right. Is he still alive and chip? Is he still alive in the alive in the relationship? Is he still alive and having the brothers sin? keep darkness at bay. You go nowhere by accident. Throughout your life, you can look and see the hand of God protecting you and guarding you, guiding your steps, even when you had no clue that's what God was doing. I look back and I just marvel some of the stupid things I did. And yet managed to survive, not because I was brilliant or cunning, but because God had a plan and a purpose. Our joy is to live out the grace of forgiveness through small, ordinary acts every day of our life. What is the most grace-filled thing you can do today? Amen. And amen.